Welcome to the Not So Basic Training Podcast featuring Suzanne Gust. And now, here's the Not So Basic Training Podcast.
We just finished talking about change in applications and computer technology with application service providers. Let's move to change that's a little more personal. I want to talk about some changes that you can expect in the future and how to deal with those changes. I also want to look at a book called Who Moved My Cheese, which has been on the bestseller list for business books for several months. I'm going to talk you through that book, but more importantly, I'm going to talk about change and how it affects people and how it affects you as a leader within an organization. First, let me scare you. In 15 years, California is predicted to have many of their highways fully automated. That means that you jump on, you let go of the wheel, and the car moves to where you want to go. Now, why should this scare you? Well, if you like driving, then that's out in California. But also, what if you're the manufacturer of bumpers? Your whole world is going to change in 15 years because California cars don't need bumpers. They need radar systems to sense how close they are to the next vehicle for their fully automated highway system. The world is changing. Now, there's some good changes predicted. In books about change, I've recently read that in 5 years, self-cleaning toilets will be part of standard new construction. Now, that change, having three boys in the house, makes me very happy. But there's some changes that scare me. They're predicting that in 20 years, people will be able to have ex utero births. That means that women will be able to have babies without ever carrying them. It's kind of scary. In 50 years, 75% of our produce will be grown hydroponically. That means not on farms, in labs. Think about your grocery stores and how that changes them. Instead of hiring workers to stock shelves, they're going to be hiring chemists because they're not going to be shipping in produce. The cost of transportation will be too high. They'll be producing that themselves. Interesting. Think about what we're going to need in our future employees. Back to the book, Who Moved My Cheese? This book is written by Spencer Johnson. You might remember this name because he co-authored The 1 Minute Manager, which was one of the most popular business books. This book, Who Moved My Cheese, I would recommend that you read. I will summarize it here, but it takes less than an hour to read. And in fact, I love this book so much, I made everyone on my staff read it. It provides great discussion. So that's an idea for you. This book is actually a parable, and it's a story. So I'm going to tell you the story that's in the book. Once, long ago, in a land not so far away, lived four little characters. And imagine this, they lived in a maze, and what they loved cheese. Now, these characters would eat the cheese, and cheese made them happy, and they spent their days looking for cheese, eating cheese, and being nourished by their cheese. The four characters were made up of two little mice named Sniff and Scurry, and two little people. They looked very similar to mice until you got close. They're actually little people, but they looked and they acted very much like people today. Their names were Hem and Haw. So two mice, Sniff and Scurry, two little people named Hem and Haw. Now, Sniff and Scurry, having only simple rodent brains, had great instincts. They would arrive every day in the maze, look for cheese, eat the cheese, and then run to find more cheese. They loved cheese. Now, Hem and Haw, who were people, remember, had complex thoughts and behaviors. They would come in every day, find the cheese, and enjoy it. In fact, they kept finding cheese again and again at a place called Cheese Station C. Now imagine that this maze is filled with corridors and dark alleys, and these people, little people, Hem and Haw, arrive at Cheese Station C, and for days and days and days, there's always cheese there. Now Sniff and Scurry were also arriving, but remember what they were doing. They were running in, eating cheese, and running back out looking for other places. Now Hem and Haw are smart. They are people. They come in, they realize there's cheese at Cheese Station C, so what are they going to do? With complex thoughts and behavior, they return every day to Cheese Station C. Now, Sniff and Scurry are using some trial and error method, running around, wasting energy, Hem and Haw thought. Now, Hem and Haw also built their whole lives around the cheese at Cheese Station C. One bought a house on Cheddar Lane and moved their family in. The other bought a mansion on Camembert Hill. In fact, they would even bring their friends to Cheese Station C to show them how wonderful their cheese was. They would point to our cheese and say, "Isn't this beautiful?" And can you imagine having so much cheese? Their whole life revolved around cheese. Now, since it was always at Cheese Station C, they started waking up a little later every day and walking a little slower. And instead of wearing tennis shoes to run there, they started wearing slippers. And they got very comfortable. In fact, they brought furniture and decorated their Cheese Station C. Haw put up a nice saying on the wall, "Having cheese makes you happy." And before too long, Hem and Haw, being so comfortable, turned confidence into arrogance, and they didn't notice that there were small changes taking place in Cheese Station C. But Sniff and Scurry did, because remember their methods? Come in, eat the cheese, move on. Each morning they did the same thing, and obviously were beating Hem and Haw there. One day, Sniff and Scurry came running in, noticed there were no cheese, and because they had simple rodent brains without a lot of thought, they said, "Hey, no cheese," and they moved on. Hem and Haw arrived, remember, late, strolling in with their slippers on. They looked around and they said, "Hey, who moved our cheese? Where did our cheese go? I can't believe that someone took our cheese." Hem was yelling, "Who moved it?" And Hem was yelling, "It's not fair." In fact, Haw was practically frozen in shock. Their behavior was not attractive, and it definitely was not productive, but it was very understandable because they had built their entire lives around this cheese. For them, their cheese had meant material things and good health and well-being and a loving family built around this. And because cheese was so important to them, they ranted and they raved for a long time about the injustice of it all. And in fact, they both went home hungry that night and very discouraged. The next day, because they had complex thoughts and behaviors, they knew there would be cheese at Cheese Station C. And so they returned to Cheese Station C, but still no cheese. Now, Hem analyzed the situation. He started asking, "Why did they do this to me? And what is really going on here? Someone must know the answer to this." And Haw said, "Hey, where are Sniff and Scurry? Maybe they know something we don't know." Hem said, "They're just mice. They don't have any brains. What do they know?" Now, by this time, Sniff and Scurry were well on their way, running through the maze, up and down the corridors, looking for cheese at any other station. In fact, before long, they found Cheese Station N and were squealing in delight because they had found more cheese than was ever at Cheese Station C. In the meantime, Hem and Haw were still back at Cheese Station C evaluating their entire situation and suffering now for many days of not having cheese. They were becoming frustrated, they were angry, and they were blaming themselves, they were blaming other people. They did not like this situation. It was not comfortable, and they didn't know what to do. They discussed leaving Cheese Station C. But Hem liked it there. He said it was so comfortable, and besides, he was too old to be wandering around looking for cheese in other places. He was also a little afraid, probably, of getting lost and making a fool of himself. With that, Haw's fears of failing returned, and his hopes of finding cheese faded, and so every day they continued to do exactly what they had done before and came to Cheese Station C. They found no cheese, and they returned home, carrying their worries and frustrations with them. Hem said, "You know, if we work harder, maybe we can find the cheese." And so they started arriving earlier and digging around Cheese Station C because surely there must be some cheese around here. But disappointed every night, no matter how hard they work, they would return home hungry. Haw began very quickly to realize that there's a big difference between activity and productivity, and no matter how hard they worked, they weren't being very productive. And Hem and Haw were growing very weak from hunger and stress. Finally, Haw almost started to laugh. "I keep doing the same thing over and over again and wondering why things don't get better. This is so ridiculous, it's almost funny. Don't you get it, Hem?" he said. "They're never going to put the cheese back. That was yesterday's cheese. It's time to find some new cheese." Hem argued, "But what if there's no cheese out there? Or what if we don't find it? I'm pretty comfortable here. I think they're going to put the cheese back." "Sometimes," Haw said, "things change and they're never the same. And this looks like one of those times, Hem. Life moves on and so should we." Haw looked very anxious out into the maze and he said, "You know, I don't know." And he wrote a saying on the wall, "What would I do if I weren't afraid?" Ha was very aware of his fear. He was very aware that he didn't know what lay ahead, but he also knew that if he stayed there, it wasn't going to get any better. And during the next several days, he decided to venture out into the maze. And he left his friend, who would not join him. And Ha's journey was confusing and challenging, and it was hard to be out in the maze. In fact, he said to himself several times, "I am not going to get this out of shape again. I'm going to wear my tennis shoes every day and stay in shape so I can find new cheese if I have to." And he realized that when you move beyond your fears, you feel pretty free. And he even wrote that on the wall. When you move beyond your fear, you feel free. He was hoping that Hem had joined him. He didn't see him, but he was hoping that he began to walk through the maze also. And so he kept leaving things on the wall, hoping that Hem would see the handwriting on the wall and also keep changing. Ha raced through the maze with greater strength and greater confidence, and he started to find little bits of cheese along the way to nourish himself. He looked around and finally came across Cheese Station N. There was more cheese in Cheese Station N than he had ever seen. And Sniff and Scurry were jumping up and down enjoying their cheese. But just like Sniff and Scurry, as soon as they'd eaten their fill, they all left to look for different cheese. Ha realized that it wasn't cheese that made him happy, and that cheese wasn't going to be the same all the time. And he realized that he did not need to burden himself with trying to keep things the same. He needed to always go out and look for new cheese. In fact, he wrote more things on the wall. He knew that if he did not change, he would become extinct. And he's hoping that Hem had left the maze, Cheese Station C, and looked for more handwriting on the wall. Words of encouragement, he left. Ha was so excited. He was so full, but he was still running through the maze. He wondered, had Hem ever let go and moved on? Had he even entered the maze? Had he discovered that he could make his life better? Ha realized that he had already tried to help his friend change, and Hem had to find his own way, beyond his own comforts and past his own fears, and sometimes he had to see the advantages of change. And Ha also realized that he was going to be more active in looking for little changes along the way and not wait until everything had changed completely. He was going to take more risks. He knew it would be healthier to be aware of his choices than to isolate himself in his own comfort zone. And he left one final message for his friend. Move with the cheese and enjoy it. There are two reasons why I wanted to tell you that story. First of all, you do not need to buy the book now, since I've summarized it for you. But secondly, it's a great transition into talking about change management. I'm sure some of you have already realized that you have lots of Hems and Haws within your organization, and you might even have been a Hem or a Haw at one time, or Sniff and Scurry. See, Sniff and Scurry are those people that things change and they go, okay, and they move on. It's funny because some of your older and best workers, not older in age, but more experienced and maybe more long-term, those are the people that tend to be the Hems and the Haws. What's funny is the temporary workers you have, you can come in, tell them they're doing something different tomorrow, and they move with the cheese. You tell someone who's been there 10 years they're doing a different job tomorrow, and they can tell you all the reasons why they can't do that. And so I want to talk about why that's really actually very healthy and very normal. And since we know business is going to change more rapidly than ever before, we need to look at the process of change. Here's the process steps. As soon as there's a change, people, first stage, number one, they hear about it. What do they need to hear when there's a change? They need to hear everything about it. In fact, there's four stages to change, the first one being hear. And if they do not hear about the change and what it means to them from upper-level management, they will hear it from someone within the organization. And by the way, what they hear will be far more interesting than reality. You can ask anyone who's ever announced a minor change and not fully explained it, and it wreaks havoc within an organization. Stage one, people need to hear about a change. They need to hear what it is, when it is, where it is, how it affects them. As soon as I hear about a change, the next place that I go is into fear. And fear is, uh-oh, what does this mean to me? That's healthy, and that's completely normal. And that is really self-preservation. If you think about fear, It is in our system so we can make sure we protect ourselves against anything that could possibly go wrong. So when someone tells me something, I think the worst possible scenario is, and I protect myself against it. So fear is a very normal place to go. So I hear about a change, I fear it. And what happens in fear is I put up all the barriers or why this is not a good idea or why this will never work. In fact, just think of any change that you would make. Tomorrow, instead of having a live person answer the phone, we're going to have voicemail. Boom! Everyone runs into fear. Well, what if our clients hate it? And what if? And that fear is something you have to deal with from a business standpoint. After fear, we go to near. That's when people accept that they finally are going to change. And then cheer is the final stage where we change. Most companies get stuck in fear, though. So let's talk about what happens and what you can do as a business leader. Remember, this is with any change. It can be changing where you're going to go this weekend with your spouse, and that you can move very quickly through those changes. I hear it, I fear it, I get near it, and I cheer it, and it can be all of 2 minutes and happen mentally. Or I can announce that we're going to restructure the manufacturing department because of the Kaizen event that we've just had. So here, we need to tell people what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, who it affects. And we need to say it about 20 times because people don't hear it the first time you say it. Next, they are going to figure out what's the worst case scenario and start to discuss it. Why? Because they're protecting themselves. The best manager I have ever seen in my life did something that was absolutely brilliant. He announced a change. He wanted to change a product. He put up a flip chart and he asked the people in the room the 10 reasons why it wouldn't work. And what he got on the table was all the fear that people had. This product won't work because it'll take longer to produce, because it'll be more expensive. And he knew that once he got all of those things on the table, he could deal with them, but not knowing them, they were all going to end up being bathroom conversations after the meeting. That's what great leaders do. They know that something's coming. They know the stages of change, and they're proactive about it. In fact, if I'm at a corporation, and let's say that I want to change the hours of the shifts, all of you should be cringing if you've ever tried to do this within an organization. So what I do is I get a key group of people, and I announce, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And then I ask them all the things that people are going to fear or why this won't work. And they'll tell you everything that you have to think about. Are you going to alleviate all those fears? Absolutely not. Can you deal with the majority of them? Yes, if you know them. At least the ones you can't deal with, you can at least tell them you've thought about it. And it will make people have an easier time dealing with the change. Here's another thing that happens. You're a key executive. You decide to change some product line. You know, personally, you and the other groups of key executives, you go through hearing about it. You go through the fear. You get through near and you get to cheer. So you're at the cheer stage. You are so excited. You walk out and announce this to your general population and you wonder why they're not as excited as you are because they're starting in the hear stage and you forgot that. They're going to go through hear and fear and near and cheer and you didn't give them a chance to do that. You can think of any change that have ever happened in your entire life. Think about having a new child, for instance, as a change. If any of you have had children, you know you've gone through this phase of change. First of all, you hear you're having a child or you hear it's perfectly normal as it's delivered. You're so excited. You look at it and think, oh, it's so beautiful. It's ours. We get to bring it home. And then about 12 hours after you get home, you hit that fear stage. Why is it crying? What is it doing? What are we going to do with it? How come this is happening or that's happening? And pretty soon, since you can't give it back, you have to figure out how to make it work and you get nearer to normalcy. And then pretty soon your cheer is the best thing you ever did, hopefully. By the way, that child keeps changing because when they hit teenage years, you go through that whole thing again. You hear what they're doing. You fear that they're out late. You start to realize how to deal with it. You get near it and pretty soon you cheer because they've successfully graduated from high school. In fact, you've probably gone through these phases 100 different times. With children, we call it, it's just another phase because we go through change all the time. But think of the person who's worked 20 years putting hubcaps on and we announce that we're going to have job rotations and they'll be doing a different job every day. How deep do their fears run? They hear about it and they think, I won't be able to do it. I won't be as fast. I don't understand. I don't like it. Now, if they sound like hem and haw, it's perfectly normal. That's what people do. Change is about moving through these stages. Smart leaders understand there's four stages and they successfully take people through them. People who aren't great leaders announce a change, walk away, and then wonder why people aren't dealing with it appropriately. So what I want you to do is concentrate. Next time you have to announce a change or you ask someone to change, even if it's changing their workspace from the right side of the office to the left side of the office, tell them who and what and when and where and how it affects them. And tell them multiple times. And then ask them, okay, why won't this work? And you'll get all their fears and you can deal with every one of them and you can move them through the change. They might not want to move with the cheese right away, but you can make it more appealing. And by the way, the more change that occurs and the better they move through it, the better they'll be able to accept change in the future.
This has been the Not So Basic Training Podcast. For more information, visit our website at notsobasictraining.com.
Produced by Converge Podcasting.